Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 317, Pen Flourish and Feathered. Sunday, September 17th, 2023. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can support this podcast and be entered into a quarterly drawing by contributing to my Ko-fi account. There are links in the episode as well as through my Instagram account. Thank you so much to everyone who has made a contribution. The drawing for the fall quarterly prize will be on September 23rd. So anyone who has made a one-time contribution or has become a member will be eligible for that drawing. And I'll be announcing the winner in the next episode. This episode features the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and Off the Shelf. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me. The weather has turned very crisp and clear and autumnal here in Northeast Pennsylvania, where I live near the Delaware Water Gap. And there have been some just absolutely A-plus afternoons for sitting on the porch and knitting, doing some fall gardening and raking of leaves. It's been really, really beautiful around here. I've been enjoying some of our late summer garden flowers, including coneflowers that are still blooming, and helenium, as well as blue-stemmed goldenrod that started blooming. My nasturtiums that I planted from seed earlier in the spring are really taking off in this last burst of summer sunshine, and the hummingbirds are still hanging around, and they're busy visiting their feeder and also visiting all of the late flowers in the garden. So it's been particularly beautiful and enjoyable. After a difficult summer health-wise and a lot of uncertainty about how I would be able to maintain stamina beginning the school year this September, I am doing pretty well. I have started a new medication that hopefully will be my medication for a very long time. I tried one over the summer, but it turns out that first one was not the one. And so after getting all of that out of my system and recovering from Lyme's disease, which I only knew I had after I spent a few nights in hospital this summer, I am on a new medication, so far experiencing very few side effects and seeing some of my strength and stamina and a little bit of optimism return. So this couldn't come soon enough, and I'm really pleased to have a little bit more energy and feel really enthusiastic about recording an episode today and sharing some updates. On Tuesday evening, I tuned into Live from the Mill. It's an Instagram live cast that is put on by Bat and Kill Fibers. And this past week, Mary Jean Packer and Carol Foster were sharing some information about where you could find Bat and Kill Fibers at upcoming fall festivals, and also some additional news, including the upcoming publication of Common Threads magazine, which is a print magazine. I'm so excited to have mine on order, and I'm looking forward to receiving it. And also the news that Hudson Valley Textile Project would be having a booth at Rhinebeck. My friend Mary Beth and I have volunteered to help out. We have not been given our shift date and time yet, but I will certainly be letting you know when that is. If you've been listening to this podcast, you know how enthusiastic I am about the efforts of Clean Fleece and having a scouring facility in the Northeast of the United States for so many reasons. And I'm so thankful to listeners, family, and friends who have made contributions, financial contributions to that project over this past winter and spring. And I'm really excited to help out at their booth at Rhinebeck. So you can look forward to hearing more information about that. I recommend, if you haven't already, to sign up for the newsletters and emails that come out from Hudson Valley Textile Project. They don't inundate you with email. There's a lot of great information in there, and it's just a great way to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening. Live from the mill may be difficult for you to catch on Instagram, but episodes are recorded and you can replay them, and there's a lot of great information in the most recent one. So you can link to that. I'll provide links to all of this content on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com, for this episode, episode 317. Another exciting thing that's coming up is the Yarns at Yin Hu Advent Puzzle Exchange. This is your opportunity to be paired with a partner and exchange puzzles that you have turned into Advent puzzles. And what I mean by that is you have turned a puzzle into something that can be assembled in a series of 24 or 25 mini puzzles that hook together to form the whole thing. It's a great way to spend some quiet, meditative time during the holidays to make a new friend and exchange some goodies. And the sign-up deadline is October 1. There is lots of information about this exchange in episode 315 that I dedicated to this event. And then there's a link to a Google form where you can sign up. And I encourage you to do that. It's going to be so much fun. I've already started thinking a lot about little gifties that I will include in my package. Participants will find out about who their partner is around October 15th. And then the mailing date is in November. Let's see, what did I say? November 15th is the ship date. So I encourage you to give it a listen, episode 315, and then sign up. We'd love you to join us. On the porch, I have been working away on my purse project, a fourth pair of fingerless mitts using the pattern Socks versus Fingerless Mitts. I've been knitting with yarn from Joanna of Knit Spin Farm. This is just a fantastic pattern. I'm still not tired of knitting it, even though this is my fourth pair. And I have a fifth pair planned. There are some deserving folks in my life who will be receiving these mitts as gifts. And I've determined that I will be giving them around Mitten Day, which is a Norwegian tradition of it being the beginning of winter, sort of the unofficial beginning of winter in Scandinavia, and a great time to check the status and the shape of your mittens, hats, gloves, and other outerwear so that you can make sure you're prepared for the colder weather. And I thought that sharing that piece of information about the Norwegian calendar and giving those mitts around October 14th would be a really nice thing. So I'm hoping to have yet one more pair before that date. And I've made a few alterations to this socks versus fingerless mitts pattern, which make it even better for gift giving. The number one thing is that I have knit the major portion of the mitt in a 3x1 rib, which makes it extra stretchy. It's so stretchy, I think that for my fifth pair, I might even take the stitch count down a little bit more. I've gone from 64 stitches, which was my usual sock cast on, to 60 stitches, and I think for the final pair, I might even go to 56 stitches. That will make a much faster knit, and I think that this is still a mitt that will fit most women's hands. At home, I've been working on Darta, a sweater designed by Inez Song for the Neons and Neutrals book. Darta is a sweater knit from the bottom up. The body is in reverse stockinette with some twisted stitch columns running up the front that become the place where you anchor very narrow ruffles. It's an opportunity to play with texture and color, and I'm still toying with the notion of exactly how I will do that, or if I will really get experimental with texture and color. We'll see. I'm knitting the body of this sweater in Jameson's of Shetland yarn in the moss colorway. It's absolutely gorgeous and so beautiful to knit with. I just love the spongy hand of this yarn, and the way it knits up in reverse stockinette in particular is fabulous. There are twisted stitch details in many parts of this sweater, including the waistband and the cuffs, and I believe the neckband as well. And where I am right now with this sweater is that I've knit the entire body. I'm knitting a cropped version, so I knit about 13 and a half inches of body. And then I have knit the front of the sweater, including binding off for the neckline and doing a little shaping for the shoulders. And then I've put those shoulder stitches on holders, and now I am working up the back. I have mostly followed the directions as written. However, this sweater calls for a mattress stitch join at the shoulders, and I think I'm going to do a 3-needle bind off or perhaps Kitchener stitch instead. I don't really fancy doing a mattress stitch at the shoulder seams, but I need to think about how reverse stockinette will work with either one of these alternative bind offs. I'm quite skilled at doing a graft between front and back stitches, just like you would on the toe of a sock, to seam up a shoulder seam. However, that's really for stockinette, and this is reverse stockinette, so I have to think a little bit about that. And then there are the sleeves and the ruffles. So I feel like I'm making pretty steady progress on this knit in order for it to be my Rhinebeck sweater. I'm knitting it on a US-4, and the knitting of the body went pretty quickly because I just used a German short row technique to do a double stitch and turn the knitting around so I could work in stockinette instead of purling every stitch. So that has gone quite well, and I'm looking forward to additional progress this week. Ever-expanding skill set. In my last episode, I mentioned that there were a few things I wanted to try my hand at the end of this indigo summer. And over the course of the past few weeks, I have managed to fit in time to do both of those. The first is to make a dinner with Malaysian blue rice as the centerpiece of the dish. And I'm really, really pleased with the way this meal came out. I made blue rice, also known as nasi caribou. I think this term refers to not just the rice, but the way the entire meal is assembled. I watched a few videos in which this Malaysian blue rice was the centerpiece of the dish, and then there were a lot of other components. First, I got kind of carried away by the whole thing and how I was going to execute all of these little parts. It's kind of like dim sum style. And then I relaxed a little bit and thought about how I could use what I had on hand and some beautiful fresh produce from the market to create some things that seemed right at about this time of year. So I'll tell you about what I did. To make the Malaysian blue rice, I first steeped butterfly pea flowers, quite a few of them, to make a really deep blue tea. And then I used that tea to make the rice. Instead of just water in a pot, I used 1.5 cups of this blue tea and 1/2 cup of coconut milk. And then I used 1 cup of jasmine rice, and it cooked up really blue, like really, really blue. It was beautiful. Then to accent this whole idea of the coconut milk, I took about 1/4 cup, I suppose, of flaked coconut, unsweetened flaked coconut, and stirred it in when the rice was done. I didn't want the coconut to turn blue. I wanted it to appear as white flecks. All of the presentations of this Malaysian dish had the rice kind of molded or unmolded, I guess, at the center of the plate. And so I took some olive oil and I used it to grease a small glass bowl. And then I pressed the rice inside and then inverted it on a plate to make a mound. And I dressed it up with some nasturtium flowers from the garden. Then around that rice, I made a little salad of cucumbers with a sugar and vinegar syrup. There was some avocado over pea shoots and a piece of grilled salmon. There were some freshly sliced tomatoes. And then I made a sauce. There was kind of a red spicy sauce that was featured in a lot of the videos that I watched. And so to make my version, which is not at all traditional, I took some chili crisp and some red chili paste, and I mixed that up with a little bit of salt, a little bit of sugar, and some Faye sour cream. I know, totally unorthodox, but really, really tasty. And I think I liked that component best of all in this dish. It's something I would certainly make again and thinned out a little bit, maybe with some lemon juice. It makes a really excellent salad dressing. I smeared it on top of the salmon that I had grilled. It's just, I'm really excited about this dressing. As you know, Faye sour cream is pretty much my favorite staple, like pantry item in the universe these days. And I always have some on hand. It keeps, this brand in particular, keeps so well in the refrigerator. And I like the way it bulks up and increases the rich mouthfeel of sauces and dressings and things like that. I even use it in baking quite a bit. So to be able to use it in this application was really exciting. So that was the meal. I will definitely be making some variation of this in the future. And I think it would be fun to explore how, as the seasons change, the little accoutrement around the dish kind of change with the season, but the rice remains the anchor of the plate. In addition to the blue rice, I also wanted to do some indigo dyeing. It's been a really long time, like several years, since I have made an indigo vat. I had a lot of the materials on hand, just kind of waiting. But to make a vat and do botanical dyeing, as I remembered late in the afternoon when my feet and my legs started getting very tired, it's tiring. It takes a lot of energy. And I was really glad to be doing this over at Dee's house with the help of Dee and also our friend Lizzie, who you've heard about and seen in some of my photographs before. And so we had a beautiful late summer day in her backyard, and we made not one, not two, but three indigo vats because we all had quite a bit of fabric. I had a lot of yarn, and I figured, you know, if we're going to make these vats, let's strike it with a nice deep blue and not mess around with a vat that's losing color. So we made three different vats, and we pretty much used up the liquid in one of them, and then Dee has kept the other two at her house with the instructions and the ingredients for reviving them to do a little more dyeing for her own purposes. I was able to use the indigo dye on some Lindy Chain yarn, which I've had in my stash for a little while, and which I just didn't care so much for the color of this yarn, but I really like the construction. I just completed a top with, it wasn't Lindy Chain, it was the Quince and Company Kestrel, but it was the same idea of this tape yarn in linen. And I think it's a really beautiful choice for a summer or warm weather garment. So I don't think I'll knit with this immediately. It'll probably take me until the weather starts to warm up again, but I have it ready on my shelf to go, and I'm really excited about it. I also had some hand-spun rambouillet from my friend Emily that has been in my stash for quite a while. It's a beautiful, puffy, it's just really gorgeous hand-spun yarn and quite a bit of yardage too. I think over 600 yards. And I put that for a dip into the indigo as well. And it came out great. One of the skeins I had wound a little bit tight. I tied quite a few extra ties around it because I always get afraid of things knotting up in a dye bath. And one of my ties was a little bit tight and there's a few white blips. Rookie move. But I might take this over to Dee's place again And if she revives the vats, then I could give this all another dip and just mellow out those white blips a little bit. Or I could just work around it. They're not throughout the entire skein. There are just like four or five of them. So I could work on, you know, maybe taking a section out or snipping and felting yarn back together. It kind of depends on what I end up making with this yarn. This I will probably knit with sooner rather than later. I think it would work into a really beautiful scarf or cowl. It has kind of a, I guess, sort of between a DK and a worsted weight. So it would make something really warm and cushy for the cool weather. For off the shelf today, I'm going to share a poem that came up on Poetry Foundation's homepage. It's called Emplumada by Lorna D. Cervantes, and this poem is from a book of the same name, Emplumada, that was published in 1981. Lorna D. Cervantes is an American poet born 1954 to Mexican and Native American ancestry. And this term, emplumada, can be translated as a combination of pen flourish and feathered. And it ties poetry's concern with beauty and myth to Cervantes' obsession with language. And I'm going to share just a little bit from the Poetry Foundation's website because they have a really, really nice and thorough bio for this poet on the site. Emplumada includes verses of mourning, acceptance, and renewal, and offers poignant commentary on the static roles of class and sex, especially among Hispanics. Cervantes' use of Spanish in this collection presaged the struggles over bilingualism that took place in the 1990s by presenting Spanish and English side by side, switching seamlessly from one to the other. Characterized by their simplicity of language and boldness of imagery, the poems in this collection recreate the world Cervantes grew up in, both celebrating and mourning her own family history. It also dramatizes the world of Hispanic women, showing the stark social realities and static roles they are often forced into, as well as speaking more generally to the liminal position of Mexican Americans in white America. So here is Emplumada by Lorna D. Cervantes. When summer ended, the leaves of snapdragons withered, taking their shrill-colored mouths with them. They were still, so quiet. They were violet, where umber now is. She hated and she hated to see them go. Flowers born when the weather was good. This she thinks of, watching the branch of peaches daring their ways above the fence. And further, two hummingbirds, hovering, stuck to each other, arcing their bodies in grim determination to find what is good, what is given to them. These are warriors, distancing themselves from history. They find peace in the way they contain the wind and are gone.